Hello, listener, and welcome back to the Outcrew podcast, a podcast where you're trapped in a room with me whilst I tell you things, and Luke is also here. How are you doing, Luke?
I'm doing all right, thanks. We just recorded an episode which we can't talk about because it's a secret, but it was a really good one.
It was a secret, very good episode. Show and tell time. Luke, what album did I give you last time? I can tell you what album I gave you last time. I gave you The Oil of Every Pearl's Uninsides by Sophie. What do you think about it?
Well, I liked some of it.
Nice.
I didn't like all of it, but I did like some of it.
Fair.
I thought the more chill stuff was quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't that keen on the more experimental aspects of the album.
Oh, that's a shame.
Personally, I thought some of it a bit much, and I didn't really...
What, like, was it... Like, were the tracks that you weren't a fan of, like, Face Shopping and Pony Boy?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I love those ones. They're so much fun.
Oh.
Famously, Pony Boy is the song that is the first song on a Spotify playlist that's called, like, Songs That I Think Would Kill Prince Philip. And I'm like, hell yeah, that song probably would kill him. I mean, he's dead. Rip. Or not. Anyway, yeah, songs that you like Immaterial, that kind of shit?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly the one I have written down.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that was my favourite song on the album, Immaterial.
It's a very good bop.
It was a banger.
A massive banger.
It was a pop banger.
It was.
I do like those.
I thought this record would fit into your love of, like, Dua Lipa and Charlie XCX. I love that record.
Yeah, parts of that song, Immaterial, sounded like they could have been off the Barbie soundtrack.
I was so annoyed when I went to see Barbie and that there was no Immaterial needle drop, because it's a song that was made for that film. Fully agree with the Barbie comparison.
Finally, I just want to say R.I.P. Sophie. All she wanted to do was look at the moon.
Yeah. God, that's so sad. Nah, rip Sophie. One of the probably the most important experimental musicians who was around. Massively, massively influential, and obviously, yeah. Shout out Sophie. Go check out her music if you haven't heard it before. What album did you give me this week, Luke?
Well, I gave you the album Visitations from Enceladus by Cryptic Shift, and I gave it to you because it was my album of the year from 2020, and it's an album I've listened to so much since it came out, and it's like my favorite type of death metal. So what did you think of it, Harry?
I quite like this record. It features an incredibly long introduction track at 25 minutes long, which, you know, when a song is that long, you do struggle a little bit to stay engaged, especially when... Because it made me think about what makes the first song off the King Gizzard record, Omnium Gatherum, work for me in the way that Moonbelt Immolator on this record didn't always work for me. And I think it's that, specifically in death metal, it's not catchy. There are loads of earwormy bits, but there's just so much to take in. It's quite a lot to deal with at once. I think it's why I preferred the Ulfar record from last year that was split up into lots of tracks than the one that was just two tracks, even though they were basically the same record with very similar musical stuff going on. I just found it easier to digest, but maybe that's because I've got like a TikTok brain.
Just get good. That's what
I do need to get good. But like, being critical of that, the length of that track, I think it's A, just my personal taste. It's not really an objective thing, if you can objectively criticize music. But I actually really enjoyed a lot of the rest of it. I thought Planetary Hypnosis went really hard. There were some thrashy bits on Moonbelt Immolator that I really enjoyed. I also fucked very heavily with the Bloodborne references on Petrified in the Hypogean Jail. I'm a Bloodborne stan. I'm the most boring bisexual alternative white person you have ever met. Of course I like Bloodborne, and it's nice to that it wasn't just a reference in the title. There was a nice little reference in there to the Celestial Emissary boss in there as well. So yeah, no, lyrically fun. It's not always going to be my favourite kind of death metal. It's not the kind of death metal that I go back to naturally over and over again, just because it is a little bit more expansive. And I think when I want to hear death metal, I want to hear something that's a little bit more like getting put on a meat hook in a basement, more so than being devoured by a space creature. But I can get down with being devoured by a space creature. I enjoyed it. It was a good album.
A very good album. It was my favorite album. It was my album of the year in the year it came out, which I believe was 2020. I've even got a massive wall flag of the album cover. And the long sleeve of the album cover as well.
That's very cool. It's a cool album
and cover. I've seen them live like 5 or 6 times, so I am a stan.
That is commitment to the bit, to be fair.
Yeah, and I'm going to see them again at Incineration.
Nice.
Very soon.
Well, fingers crossed they're as good live as they are on record, because I do think they're very good on record.
They are very good live. 3 of the 4 guys in Cryptic Shift are in Slime Lord, and the one guy that isn't is in Cryptworm and Set Privation.
Which is
so
a nuts combination of bands.
Some of the best UK death metal out there.
They've also got a sequel to this record I've just seen on their Bandcamp coming out on Metal Blade Records soon, which is very cool. I also want to give sequel to have? Visitations from Enceladus coming soon on Metal Blade Records.
Oh, just their second album?
Yeah, I mean, they've put out another album, another couple of albums since this one.
Oh, yeah, that's not a full album, though. This is their first full album. That was like we can cut all this. This is it's like the EP they released ages ago, but like done so it sounds better.
Oh, okay, very fair. Yeah, the only other thing I want to say is it's nice to see a death metal album that is A, looks like it's hand painted, it's very pretty, and secondly, it's just a dude who looks like, all things considered, he's having a fairly normal time, and I quite enjoy that. He's just in a big lake that is made of blood, but you know.
Yeah, it is red.
Yeah, but seems pretty chill.
So next time, instead of doing show and tell, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're still going to be giving our thoughts on an album, but the guest for next episode released a new album very recently, and we're going to talk about that. The band's called Flesh Creep, and the album's called We Need You to Bleed.
Yeah,
it's out now at time of release. It wasn't out when we recorded the chat with our guest, but if you want to listen to it beforehand, go do that. And you'll find our thoughts on it next time.
It's really good, I can tell you that much.
We're so tired because we just recorded a really sick episode, which will come out in like 4 weeks' time.
It will.
But an episode that will come out in 0 minutes' time is the one we recorded a few weeks ago with Craig. So here it is.
Time travel to Craig. Bye.
Hey. This is just Editor Harry jumping in to say that I'm really sorry that the audio quality for this episode isn't very good. We had some issues with Craig's audio, and we've had to rely on the backup recording, which is much lower quality than our usual standard. It will be sorted by next week. Sorry.
Today we're going to be chatting to someone very special. He's a manager of an underground label, a harsh noise connoisseur, and an all-around dude in the scene. It's our mate Craig. How does it feel to be in the Up Crew, man?
It's good, man. Thanks for having me. It's a fucking pleasure to talk to you fellas. I appreciate being called a special guy.
Nah, it's great to have you on, Craig. So basically, we begin all of our episodes with the same question, which is, how did you first get into music and what drew you to the heavier side of stuff?
Man, I was thinking about this on my way to work, actually, and I was like, I guess the thing that really put me onto heavy music in the first place was I don't know if you guys ever had like Sky TV growing up, but there was this channel Scuzz.
I remember
Scuzz. It was like the only music channel that had played like heavy type music. And like none of my friends, I had like 2 friends at school that were into metal, and like none of my family really put me onto any kind of music whatsoever. So I saw that and I was just like, whoa, there's like guitar music that's distorted, whoa. So from there I got into like, oh man, I cringe it so much now, but like my main bands were like Linkin Park and Bullet for My Valentine, and all so like, you know, early 2000s like emo, I guess you'd almost call it like crossover, like not like crossover thrash or whatever, but like, you know, just a melding of loads of really rubbish genres, but with
piss crossed over with shit.
Crossover of just shit and piss. Just loads of terrible music. Because it was around that time I was like, I grew up in like a really rural part of Dorset. I had a really rubbish internet connection, so like everything I'd watch stuff on TV. I'm like, oh man, I go on LimeWire and download like, you know, one kilobit version of like that single. And like I remember having like one single that was like had like a radio intro from it, from like an internet radio. And I was thinking like that was like such a specific period of history, right? But like, it was like a lost art when like the tape days where you tape stuff off the radio. It's just like to have like the digital version of that from the internet is like, that was literally must have been about a year or something where like that was a thing before people started like just ripping CDs.
Yeah, the only thing that I remember that I did that was kind of similar to that is I remember years back, I think I bought like a copy of Rock Sound or Kerrang or one of those magazines, and on the sample the sample CD that they used to put on those back in the good days, they had Chimes at Midnight by Mastodon, which is still one of my favourite Mastodon songs. But at that point, I'd not heard any stoner, sludge metal, anything like that. And I was like, this is incredible. But the CD, I couldn't rip for some reason. So I went onto YouTube and did like a YouTube downloader, got the worst bitrate, most scuffed recording of this Mastodon song. It was compressed to all shit. Put it into Windows Media Player. Added the like artwork and all of the metadata manually, all to avoid paying like 79p for one song.
Yes, mate. That's it. That's doing OG piracy.
I did then buy the album. I've got it on vinyl, and it's a beautiful vinyl. But yeah, no, that's my only similar experience. But that's so funny.
I love that, man. It was like the whole. I feel like there's kids nowadays that won't know like the ripping from YouTube days. But I was like, that was what you had to do when streaming services didn't exist or whatever. And it was like you needed to build up your MP3 library through just any means you could. You had to be DIY about it.
Like when we were like 12 or 13, you might have a tenner a month or 20 quid a month spare to kick towards an album or two. But nowadays that can go straight to some shitty, horrible streaming company that barely pays the artists anything. But you get access to everything. So there's just no real need to do piracy really in that same way. But yeah, different times. Yeah. A truly lost art, Windows Media Player, man. When that thing, when they stopped bundling that with Windows, my heart broke. That was when I had to start switching over to a streaming service because I was like, I use this to like sort out all my music and I can't do it anymore because I was still ripping from CDs. Like, 2018, I was still buying physical copies and ripping from CDs to put it onto like MP3 players and shit.
I gotta ask as well, like, what was your? Did you guys have like those MP3 like players that were also like USB sticks?
No, oh, I didn't have that. No,
it was like pre iPod, and it was like my first like music player was a 256 meg MP3 player, and it was like it had enough for like it was like 50 songs or something, and I was like, I'll never fill this up. For like 3 years I had about like 20 songs that I would listen to.
That's so funny. Like
my early like music outgoings was like so stunted because I just had access to nothing.
That leads us quite nicely into the next question. So from like Linkin Park and Bullet for My Valentine, obviously your music taste has changed over time, so how has that kind of evolved, and what have you been listening to lately?
Oh man, so I think it really blew off when I went to university and I got a good internet connection, and like streaming started becoming like more prevalent and stuff. I started like branching out and like meeting new people, and they recommended me stuff. And like, I don't know if this was the same for a lot of other people, but I found that like Death Grips as a band was like a massive like gateway drug. Mm-hmm. To like so many other like forms of experimental music. I was like, I've never heard anything like this. I was never really like massively into hip hop or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, this is the heaviest shit ever. And I was like, oh, how can it be? It's hip hop. And I was like, I put on like ex-military. And I was like, whoa, okay, this is the good stuff right here.
Yeah.
So from there, I got into like, I was like, what's this noise music people are talking about? And it's just like, oh, it's just noise. Oh, fuck, brilliant. And eventually got into like, I think I started following like Anthony Fantano, and then I saw like, I think I just saw him review in the same, in their like 6 month window, reviewed like Nails, You Will Never Be One of Us, and Full of Hell, Trumpeting Ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, there's this thing called Power Violence and Grindcore. And I was like, finally, the thing that people have been joking about metal being for years, of just like, oh, it's just dudes shouting and just like fast stuff. I've been trying to find that. All I want is guys shouting and just playing blast beats, and finally the genre is just that. And I'm like, yes, fill my boots. Oh, I just love it so much.
That's so funny, and also like quite relatable. I had fairly similar experiences. I came back to Death Grips. They weren't my route into extreme shit, but I remember discovering Giving Bad People Good Ideas, which is the opening track off, I can't remember what the album's called, it doesn't matter, that song, and it's like it just drops into blast beats out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, I knew Death Grips was experimental and extreme, but this is nuts that this is technically classed as like experimental hip hop. No. The Fantano route in as well. As much as it shames me to say it is relatable, like I still follow Anthony Fantano.
I find he's more of like a, I don't really care about what he really thinks about music. And it's like, usually if he's usually fairly on the ball of like, if he says this is a really great album, then there's something to it. And it's going to be definitely like worth your time listening to. Mm. But I found it more interesting of like the dude's like plugged in to all these different music scenes. And it's just like all the interesting stuff that bubbles up.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, cool. There's this album cover. That looks interesting. I'm going to go check this out.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that. Like I find the range of shit that he covers, like I really got into Caroline Polachek last year, and like I'm not a big art pop person, but I never would have listened to that record if that didn't come up, and I was just like, well, he's given this an amazing review, let's give it a go, and it is a fantastic album. So yeah, no, I think he's like, as like a way of broadening your horizons, I'm a proponent of Anthony Fantano, and I will fight anyone who disagrees.
Yeah, Mal, I'm with you there. I gotta ask as well, actually, you brought up Caroline Polachek, like, how many like extreme metal listeners went through their like hyperpop phase? Because I definitely did.
Oh, I did. I have been listening to, since I first discovered it, The Oil of Every Pearl's Unsides by Sophie.
Yes!
For years.
What absolute stonking bangers.
Incredible, transcendent, beautiful album.
Rest in peace to one of the realest producers that are all, one of the most beautiful human beings that has ever lived, honestly.
Absolutely.
Seriously, I've never lamented a loss of an artist more than Sophie. Like, the impact that she left on the pop landscape was amazing. I know this is like a metal podcast, but like, if anyone listening doesn't know who Sophie is, like, sort your life out. Listen to that album, because it will blow your fucking noodle.
And there is so much extremity to hyperpop, and like it's bled into the mainstream with artists like Charlie XCX and Slater, but like there is so much nasty, disgusting production. Or even bands that are just like, yeah, fuck it, we will just put in a really clipped, scuffed, fuck death metal breakdown at the end of a song. Like 100 Gecs have done on like 3 occasions, and it's like, I'd fuck with any genre, any artist and any genre willing to do that and pull it off. No matter how like weird and unlistenable it gets.
Yeah, I feel like that's what Poppy's been doing for the last like 3 albums, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got complicated feelings about Poppy. I think the first album that she did, I disagree. I think that was brilliant, and I think it's gotten, because she's on Sumerian Records, and I, sorry for anyone that works for Sumerian Records, but I kind of think there's a track record of artists kind of going slightly, I don't know. I just think the output's gotten a little bit forced and artificial. She did a really cool like mathcore EP for like NXT. It was like a wrestling show. That EP was great. I'm not such a fan of the other stuff that she's done since then. But you know, it's still cool that a pop artist and YouTuber has done that crossover.
Yeah, I appreciate her like getting out there, and like she recorded like a harsh noise EP at one point. I was like, whoa, let's check this out. And like save everyone the time, that EP sucks. like, as a person who, like, I absolutely adore Harsh Noise, and like, that is just trash, honestly. Mm. Like, I don't know who it's aimed at, because it's like, Harsh Noise fans probably aren't listening to Poppy, and Poppy is not gonna, like, I don't know, put people onto Harsh Noise. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll have, the Death Grips moment. Maybe Poppy is, to this generation, what Death Grips was to us. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I feel that. I feel like there's a couple of artists that fit into that category of like doing a version of extreme music that appeals to the passerby. We've talked about her before on the podcast, but Scene Queen, I feel like, does it for like a similar kind of vein as Poppy, but like slightly more explicitly political, whatever. And I'm just like, and I'm like, I just don't think it appeals to people with that much in-depth knowledge of metal. And like, if it's a way of people listening to heavy music and they use it as a gateway, fine, whatever. If people listen to that Poppy album and like, wow, Harsh Noise through this kind of bad Poppy record, I'll go and listen to more Harsh Noise. Cool. Great. Not going to gatekeep that, but I'm also like, we don't have to pretend it's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. It's more just maybe disappointed that people's first exposure to it is going to be something that's like maybe a bit kind of subpar. Like, it's not the best and brightest of what the genre has to offer. People might listen to it and go like, oh, this genre's boring, and then just like dismiss it. Because I definitely did that with like pop music for the longest time, and then, you know, the likes of like Charlie and Sophie XCX and all that. So it's like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That's why we should be teaching Morbid Angel in schools.
Yes, brother.
Should be on the curriculum, you know.
Kids need riffs. You asked me what I was listening to, and we were on a whole ass tangent, didn't we?
That's fine. What have you been listening to lately? Let's circle back to that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do structure. I'm getting really big into like straight edge hardcore right now.
Nice.
And I don't know. I got mixed feelings about straight edge because, like, it's like personally, I don't drink. Basically don't do drugs. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like making your whole ass band and personality about it is just like, come on, man. Like,
I get you. However, a lot of those straight edge bands have some of the best riffs out there. Like,
oh my god, yeah. Like
Inclination, like, Magnitude, One Step Closer, some of my favourite like new up and comers. But like there's so much history like, to it as well.
There's so many good straight edge bands coming out of like Days and Triple B Records. And yeah, like basically the whole like Bay Area hardcore scene. Like I didn't find out until the other day that like Drain is a straight edge band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well that's what half of what Living Proof is about. Find the Strength is about going straight edge.
Craig, do you remember what I told you yesterday about Drain?
Yes, I remember what you said.
I still don't know if it's true or not. Higgy, have you heard this? Apparently the reason why Drain play with the lights on is because Sammy's scared of the dark.
I mean,
I don't know if it's true or not, but like it's just,
I know
more
for
fun
a
to
fact
believe that it is.
That Sammy was the drummer of Gulch, and I have seen videos of Sammy in the dark playing for Gulch. So
did he look scared?
He might have been very, very scared. And that might
How
be
could
why.
You tell? Because he never doesn't smile.
Yeah, no. I think that's bullshit.
I don't know where I heard that, but like, I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to choose to believe that and not check if it's true or not.
You know,
it's
what,
more
man?
Fun.
Absolutely, like, keep spreading that rumor because it's just too funny not to.
I fully support that.
It's going to be like that rumour that went around at school of like, oh, Marilyn Manson had two ribs removed so he could suck his own dick.
everyone had that rumour. And the fact it was still going around in like the 2010s when I was in secondary school, which ages me, is like, Marilyn Manson was not relevant. How did we know who that was to care?
It's literally just the idea of self-fellatio is that powerful. It transcends generations.
And I guess they hadn't discovered a weirder guy yet. So they were like, yeah, we're going to pin this one on Marilyn. Awful guy. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
I understand kind of your connection to the Outcrew came from meeting Luke at a hardcore gig in Bristol last year. Which band was that?
Yeah, we were trying to remember. Yeah, yesterday. It was that Finnish hardcore band who toured with Doldre. And Chewing Glass played that gig as well. Because the name was in Finnish, so that makes it a bit hard to remember.
I don't know any Finnish hardcore bands. I only have
They're
knowledge
really good,
of,
though.
I only have knowledge of the Swedish hardcore scene, which that's not a bit. so I can't help you there.
If you guys have got show notes, we should totally dig out that band, stick them in there, because it's the only way people are going to be able to find that band, especially if they're English, is see it written down, basically.
Yeah, I'll dig up the poster or something. I'll try and find it, and then I'll text Higgy, and then you can just cut in right now.
The band's name is Koti Tuhoa, spelt KOHTITUHOA. There you go, boys. Fix that for you.
Thanks, Harry, for telling us the name of that band.
Yeah, thanks, Harry. You're so much sexier in the future. Basically, you met Luke at a hardcore gig a couple of years ago. Guys have been going to gigs fairly recently, recently together. What has been your most recent kind of highlight?
Oh man, there's been so many good shows, man. Like, I feel like when we saw Drain last year, that was like, I felt like I went to like mosh heaven that day. It was so, it was just absolutely wild. I feel like I actually wrote a piece about this on my website recently, I was just like, as more of like a sort of personal journal type deal, less of like a, hey, everyone read my website, but like, just to sort of like mentally process what happened in the last year, because it's been a busy old time for me. And I think the thing that stood out to me the most was our mutual friend Yasan. They put on a show to raise money for medical aid for Palestine, and it was just like just the homies. Like every single band played their absolute socks off, gave some of the best performances I've heard. It was the first time I've like seen like Kanehurst as well, as they were like a local screamo band. They were absolutely amazing. Every single one of them had just nothing but nice things to say about like the scene and like Yasan as well. And it was just like the whole vibe of the show was just like unlike any other gig I've ever been to, just like an endless flow of just like love and positivity, but also like the Ministry of Silly Walks very much in effect.
Oh, Ben in the pit.
Oh, Ben. God bless. Shout out Ben from Deprivation of Liberty, the man who's got the strongest pit game in all of Bristol and South West Wales. Like, you see him in a show and it's like, oh, shit. It's going to go off now.
Nah, that sounds amazing. I also want to say, shout out Kanehurst. I have not gotten the chance to see them, but their name is a reference to my favorite game of all time, which is Bloodborne. At least I think it is. That's fucking sick. More references to Bloodborne or like Soulsborne games in metal and hardcore. And there's also a band called Godskin Peeler, who are like a death metal band from the US. They're the only other one that I found. Sick.
I say also check out there's a Dark Souls themed black metal project called Firelink, which is really good.
That sounds sick.
Man, that show was so good. I felt like that was like the culmination of like the last sort of year and a half. I started being a bit more social with people at shows. I think the reason I met Luke is because I kind of had to be social, because I was like trying to pass out like flyers.
Yeah, you gave me a flyer.
Yeah, that was it. And like, there's been so many people like yourself, Luke, that I keep seeing at the same shows, and eventually just being like, oh, I can just like go up to this person and just be like, hey, what's up? Like, I keep seeing you. Like, we obviously have like something in common because we keep going to shows. Like, what's your name? Let's just get buzzing. And like, I've met some really amazing people, yourself included, just by like, just getting out of my shell and just like chatting to people. And like that benefit show was just almost, I think it was like a dozen people or something that I've met at all these different shows all coming together for this cause. And it was like, I kept turning around and be like, oh, is this homie? Oh, is this person? Oh, is this person? And it's just like, just fantastic. Like that's some of the reasons I feel so strongly about like the Bristol scene, especially like the Southwest chain movement. It's just full of lovely people that just want to be your mate. Fucking brilliant.
I have to admit, I'm shit at getting out and talking to people when I'm at gigs, especially like I've started to solo gig again. And I'm never in the right headspace. I think I'm always like slightly anxious and on edge when I'm at a gig, and I don't know why. But like until the music's playing, I'm always like slightly in on myself. So I need to give that a try, because clearly it's good, because we put you on the podcast.
Yeah, man, this wouldn't happen if I kept myself to myself, innit?
Absolutely.
So nice. Craig, as well as being an enjoyer of heavy music, you also get involved in dealing it out to those in need. Alongside your day job as a video game developer, you run a DIY label called Eggy Tapes. Can you tell the listener a bit about what the label does?
I publish tapes. They're not very eggy. My whole label is just like a lie. I just love cassette tapes, man. I just absolutely love them. I guess because I'm just like, my brain's just kind of like broken. I don't know. We all came out of lockdown different. I went into lockdown thinking that tapes were like dumb and like old and like who cares about them. I came out the other side being like, cassette tapes are the coolest fucking thing in the world, and I want everything to do with them.
Is that like craving physical media again, because everything's kind of online and it feels like you don't own anything?
That's part of it, yeah. So like I think in like 2019, maybe it was 2018, I started like buying like a lot of records and getting like really into physical media. And like everyone, you know, you end up with a lot of time during, you know, the fucking dark age of 2020. So, you know, I just spent more and more time Googling to be like, oh, you know, spend time just because, oh, can I get this that I've streamed a lot? Can I buy this? Can I buy that? Mm-hmm. And I got really into, there's this grind band from Fresno, California called Fiend. I saw in this documentary called Slave to the Grind. It's a great documentary if you haven't seen it. It's all about the sort of like the rise of grindcore as a genre and like where it's going, where it has been. Like, there's a big section on like about Anal Cunt, and it kind of goes into their kind of nature. Yeah, I was getting really into Fiend, which was like they only featured for a bit, and I was like, whoa, this is great, this stuff. It's just like just a real DIY two-piece grind. And like the only physical that they had for like their main album was a cassette that was being sold by a guy called Jacek, who runs Grindfather Productions. So oh, Jacek, cool guy. He just runs out of Chepstow, and I bought it, and I was just like, well, I was like, I think we had a tape deck in like my shared house, and I was like, well, it's the only way to get this album. And it's like, yeah, I could stream it, but like, eh, who wants to stream? Like, I gotta get the physical. Mm-hmm. And then there was like loads of other stuff that was like tape only as well. And I was like, oh, this is sick. And during the pandemic, I was living in this little cottage that was right by this nature reserve, which is like, could not be in a better place to like go through a pandemic. So I had this Fiend tape, and I bought this tape player on eBay, and I also bought this box set, which is a radio play of Lord of the Rings with John LeMessurier in it, who I think plays Bilbo in the Peter Jackson film. He's Frodo in this one. And I just like just wandered around all these forests just listening to Lord of the Rings on this tape player. It was just nice being able to leave the phone and the internet at home and just being able to disconnect, because I feel like everyone just got like so wired in, they just couldn't, myself included, I just could not turn off. So just being able to go out into nature and be like, no, I can have audio, but it's not connected to my phone. It's just like such a freeing thing. And then, yeah, I just started getting really obsessed with like the actual tech with cassette tapes, because like my tape player broke. It's like, who am I going to take it to? Am I going to buy another one? No, I've got to fix it. I got to DIY. I got to do this myself. Or some stuff, it was just like, oh, this physical thing doesn't exist. I'll make a tape for it to like bootleg it for myself. Mm-hmm. Like so much of it was just like, I just got to take ownership and just like get busy. If I want to get involved in this format, I got to take it into my own hands. Just guess like kind of where Eggy Tapes came from. Just like, just do it yourself.
We mentioned Eggy Tapes in a previous episode because I wanted to talk about the floppy disk that you sold me.
Oh yeah, I tricked you into buying floppy disks, you dumb bastard.
I have it right here. I have it in my hand right now. I mean, you can't see it, but I have it in my hand right now. It's got 13 seconds of grindcore on it, and it's got three tracks.
That's a pretty good 13 seconds, to be fair.
I've listened to it on Bandcamp, because there's a Bandcamp code on the back, but I have no fucking clue how to use this thing.
Well,
I'm too young. I'm too mid-20s for this.
You've got to work out how to make it work, because you know how like everyone's like, oh, the quality of vinyl is like, it's a different experience. Floppy discs, man, they will rock your shit.
Also, I want to ask, because we had this question when we were talking about it last time. Is 13 seconds the amount you can fit on a floppy disk, or was that just the stylistic choice?
Well, here's the thing, it depends. So I was trying to put all the files on as uncompressed WAV. So it looked like, without joking, it is really, really good quality audio on that floppy disk for two of the bands. Now, I got beef with Filth Collins. Kez, I'm calling you out. Because their song, you got Tomsk, they got a 2-second song. You got Public Execution, 3-second song. And you got Filth Collins, who eventually crawl out of bed and do a 7-second song. Like, Jesus, it's fucking stoner metal. Like, come on. Chop, chop.
Mate, get that grinding, fellas. Funeral doom, yeah.
Exactly. So I had to downgrade them to MP3 because the WAV was too big. But yeah, so you can fit... You got like... What was it? It's 1.4 megabytes. So you can get one really rubbish, long MP3 on it, or a couple of really, really short WAVs.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I appreciate the shout out for the floppy disk as well. Like, I didn't expect to sell like any of those at all, and now I'm like practically sold out. I'm like, what the fuck? People want to buy floppy disks in 2024? Oh god.
Like, I'm wondering what it gig it was before, but like I was just like in, just like wandering around Bristol, like, and the gig wasn't meant to start like another hour. And I don't know why I got there so early, but I was like, what do I do? And I just went to Black City because it was open, and just had a look around. And then there was just a floppy disk there, and I was like, oh shit, I know who makes these.
Oh man, shout out Dave at Black Sea, the only shop in the world that sells grindcore floppy disks. An actual champion of the scene, our Dave.
Amazing.
Big up, Dave. I'm quite on your website here, Craig. Like every fucker that owns a label, you also have a solo harsh noise project, Puddle Brain. Where does your interest in harsh noise come from? And what does Puddle Brain involve?
Oh, man. Yeah. So, Puddle Brain is pretty much just me dicking about just with guitar pedals and like a contact mic. I usually perform on an ironing board. A lot of these noise heads, they got like the noise table, which is like a camping table. Those people don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Get an ironing board, mate. It's so much more comfortable.
Oh my god.
It's nice and long. You can fit all your pedals on it. You could tell you what you could do, right? You could put a contact mic on that fucker and you could like shake it up and down. It sounds fucking horrible. It's great, honestly. If no one's ever made harsh noise, like get a couple of cheap pedals, plug them in, get a contact mic and just start like fucking shouting at it because it sounds amazing. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, you either hear harsh noise for the first time and you go like, this is the coolest shit I've ever heard, a bit like metal. And then you're like, then you want to try and make it, or you hear it and go, this is the dumbest thing ever, and you just like get switched off.
How did you get into it? Because like, I've listened to a couple of noise records. Like, it was one that came out on Closed Casket Activities a couple of years ago by Sawdream, and I kind of got into it a little bit, and then I was like, it's just like I enjoy it when it's on because it's so its own thing, but it's not something that I go back to very regularly. So like, how did it get its claws into you?
Man, Sawdream is such a sick project. It's the two of the fellas from Full of Hell. That's like,
yeah,
those guys, just everything they touch is just absolute gold dust. I got into it through, I was with via Death Grips again. So I started listening to Clipping, which is a harsh noise project with Davy Diggs, who some people might know from Hamilton.
Yeah, I love Clipping.
They're such an amazing group.
Existed in Addiction to Blood is one of my favorite records. I love that band.
Massive. I got into them. The first thing I ever heard was Mid City, and the intro to Mid City is like basically the like harsh noise sound I've been trying to chase for so long. Okay. It's just like an absolute barrage of just big, crunchy, abrasive, just like absolute tortured electronic signals. That's just like, it just comes at you so quick, and it's just like such a nuts arrangement of stuff, and then just goes straight into an a cappella. That's the thing about like a lot of like noise stuff that really makes it. It's the combination with other genres and like the contrast between like, you know, loud as it possibly can be, and then like straight into something else of just like an a cappella or like choir singing or like a clean guitar, and then you know, back into the noise. That's what makes it. It's the contrast. Yeah. But yeah, I got really into listening to noise through Clipping, and then I was saying for the longest time that I wanted to make it myself, and then it took my friend Finn, who is in the first band I ever put out was a band called Grandchild. And it was basically just my mate Finn and his pals, and they had this EP that was just like, I was always saying like, oh, you should totally do a tape of it, you should totally do a tape of it. And they're like, oh yeah, sure, maybe. And after about a year, I was just like, all right, I'll do it myself then. And that's like why IE Tape started, because I was just like, well, I may as well just get busy and do it myself because no one else is going to do it. But Finn booked me for a show before I'd ever made any noise. So I was like, oh, do you want to make some noise? And I was like, what? But I don't know how. He was like, ah, learn. I was like, I don't have any equipment. I was like, all right, I'll lend you some equipment. I was like, shit in hell, all right. And then it just spiraled out from there. And then my friend Jack as well also helped me to be like, oh, here's what no input mixing is. I was like, the what? And it's like, oh, you turn this up and it makes a horrible sound. I'm like, oh, tell me more.
The sounds are in the box. Your job is to get the sounds out of the box.
Yeah, man. It's one of those things that's like, it's one of the hardest genres to get into, but one of the easiest to make. So it's basically anyone who has about £100 to spare and likes noise will eventually have their own solo harsh noise project.
So kind of segueing away from music for a little bit, but only slightly. At the Outcrew, we kind of love to, we want to chat to people and give platforms to people from typically underrepresented groups in heavy and extreme music. You have a husband, Craig, so how would you describe your kind of identity, your LGBTQ place in that community, in your own words?
Yeah, I guess I'm a cis bi guy.
Nice.
Sometimes it's just be like that, you know.
Yeah. It just be like that. Sometimes you're just gay as fuck.
Sometimes it just happens, really.
Sometimes you just realize one day it's just like, hang on a minute, I'm gay.
There's something.
Oh Christ! Some kind of faggot dude. Ah, oh, shit.
So, how much of your identity do you kind of take into metal and hardcore and noise as a performer and as a kind of an attendee as well? And like, has your work been influenced by that very much?
I mean, I guess I would say, like, at least not like consciously. I don't think my art or like anything I do with a label is necessarily like informed by my sexuality. Mm-hmm. I will say that after like coming to terms with my sexuality, I have started looking at aspects of metal and have been like, oh, this is all really dumb. Like, this is all like so homoerotic and just like an excuse for guys to touch each other and to like just do effeminate shit. It's just like, how many, like, my friend who I won't name him right now for this, like, for their idea of this, you know who you are, but like has this theory of like, if Varg and Euronymous just fucking came out, then Dead would still be alive. It was just a bunch of Norwegian twinks who just had so much pent-up sexual energy they killed each other.
We'll never know.
And it does stick to the famous twink to horrible neo-Nazi pipeline, which seem to exist on the internet.
Yeah, it's a straight line of about 5 centimeters.
I completely agree with that. We were like talking about this a couple of episodes ago. I can't remember who we were talking about it with, actually. We were talking about like Manowar album covers and like how it's just like, guys, you need to think about why you want that to be the image of your band. There's nothing wrong with it, but I feel like there's something you're not talking about here.
I always think of the most previous what's it called? It's an Eternal Champion album where there's a dude that's like holding a big ass sword, and it's like, oh, but it's cool. He's got a scantily clad lady round his legs, but it's just like, yeah, but she's not in the center of the shot. The guy with his fucking chest out is, and he's hot. Like, we all know why we're here, right?
Just fucking sit down, woman, and I'm playing with me sword.
So much of the metal scene is built on homoeroticism, and it's just like, it's so absurd to me that it is even possible for there to be any level of homophobia in the scene. It's just like all of like porno grind and like so many aspects of like deathcore and all that stuff is just, it's just pure homoeroticism. It's beautiful and I love it. Also, it's like some people just need to fucking come out, you know.
There is like big rifts between different scenes in extreme music, where there are some scenes where it feels like it's way more accepting and commonplace to have openly gay, openly queer, openly trans people. Like, I'm thinking of like a lot of the screamo and kind of when screamo bleeds into post-hardcore and metalcore, like openly queer artists, and into like power violence and heavy hardcore. Like, there's a whole underground of artists that are openly queer, and it feels very inseparable from their music. And then there's just some genres, like, how many queer people are there openly in like fucking Beatdown? Like, some, but not as many as statistically speaking there probably should be. So like, do you feel like there are different vibes kind of queerphobia, homophobia wise between the different spaces that you operate in, and have you like experienced that in any way?
Yeah, sure. I feel like every scene does have its different vibe. Like, I personally have never encountered anything that I would call like explicit like queerphobia, transphobia, or like homophobia. Like, I think it's all very accepting and whatever. I think there's just different degrees of like mayo macho fucking nonsense that exists in every scene. Like, I feel like hardcore has like as much as Luke knows this, I love a good mosh. I love a slam. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic stuff. But one of the big problems with it is it excludes a huge portion of people and makes it a very male-dominated space, because a lot of people are just intimidated by like the physicality that comes with it. Especially with like just even just a standard mosh pit, like a lot of people are just scared of it.
And won't someone think of the twinks?
Won't someone think of the twinks and the girlies? Like, honestly, yeah, there's not nearly enough like equal representation in teenagers beating the shit out of each other, and that's really sad.
I agree with you. I think to balance that as well is like, that's not to say that women and femme people don't and smaller like queer people don't get involved in pits. Like, some of the absolute nastiest moshing and crowd killing I've seen has been femme people like spin kicking people in the head, and I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna stand over here and you can do that over there, but go for it.
Nothing bothers my crumpet more than seeing some like 5 foot lash just like fucking laying into the fellas. Like, it honestly warms the cockles of my heart seeing the girls beat the shit out of the guys. But yeah, it's you have to have a very specific kind of personality to be like, no, I'm gonna overcome this like macho gender boundary thing to participate in it. And it's just like, I can absolutely understand how a lot of people, you know, don't want to do that and don't want to fuck with it and just want to chill and have a good time at a show, and why they are off put by things like that. Which is a real shame, because realistically, most of the time, like, no one gets hurt.
And like, a lot of people will say, oh, but hardcore whatever is not for everybody, it doesn't have to be for everybody, if like you can just stand somewhere else. And I'm like, I did an interview a couple of years ago with like Tsunami, who have since blown up and become really, really big. And one of the things that they were saying,
lucky duck.
Like, but yeah, their overriding message was, we want to be careful about the passerby. We want to be careful about the tourist that comes in and changes the thing that we're doing, because we love the thing that we're doing so much. And I think there's a lot of resistance to people being like, hey, if you see someone standing kind of two rows back, don't like reach over and punch them when you're crowd killing or like or moshing, because
that's
like,
fucked, man.
Clearly they're not trying to be part of this, and as much as this is an expression of your emotion, you cannot be an asshole about it. So like, I get that,
absolutely.
But I'm also like, yeah, make it as inclusive as possible without fundamentally changing the thing that I think we all love.
I think if you don't actively make an effort to make sure that people are like included and take steps to do that, the scene will stagnate and it will not remain fresh. Like, you need new people coming in and not being scared
absolutely
to get involved and get fucking busy, because I love it when I see people doing like the classic slam. Everyone knows that like hardcore's got like 5 dance moves, right?
Yeah,
when someone starts doing them and they're really, really bad at it, and it's just like, I love seeing it, because that's someone who hasn't done it before but wants to get involved. It's like, that's just fantastic.
So keeping on the looking ahead to the future vibe, what exciting things does the rest of 2024 have in store for Eggy Taped and Puddle Brain?
Well, by the time this is out, hopefully I should have my self-titled tape out.
Nice.
Ooh.
Which you can listen to it now on Bandcamp. I'm the only person who I've ever met who's actually shadow banned on Bandcamp, and I have no idea why.
That's hilarious.
It means I'm really difficult to find. Maybe it's for the best, because it's really shit. I got my self-titled tape. There's going to be... I should have some stuff from Chewing Glass, which is going to see the light of day very soon.
Nice.
Nice.
Local band.
We love Chewing Glass.
Chewing Glass is sick, man. Shout out to Dan as well. Just like,
yeah, big up Dan.
Lovely fella. What else we got in the works? More Grandchild. Love those boys and Grandchild. Going to get more of their stuff out as well. I've got a bunch of noise coming down the pipeline. Like, my room is filled with cassette tapes right now. So my buddy Roman, we got some of his stuff. Distraxy. If anyone is familiar with noise and not familiar with Distraxy, holy smokes, one of the most interesting artists that's happening in the Southwest right now is Alina. Absolute privilege, always put out her material. That's going to be out by the time this podcast goes to air. So much. I just want to rattle off the stuff in my spreadsheet here. But just like, We got noise, we got grindcore, we got black metal, we got sludge coming out, we got some ambient, we got some drone. Yeah, man, fill your boots. Just loads of weird stuff. That's all coming out on tapes.
Amazing.
Anything else that you're looking forward to in the near future? Any gigs, albums, festivals, etc.?
I tell you what, I'm gassed for that Monochrome Festival in Bristol.
Oh yeah, that one will be good.
The tag of it is the Festival of Ugly Music, which nice. Could not have sold it to me harder. It's so cool.
Piggy or Vacuous are on that bill.
Ah, sick. We love Vacuous.
I love them. I've been waiting to see them for a minute.
Yeah, it's, I believe it's their Bristol debut.
Tell you what, the day after Monochrome as well is Null. What a wombo combo that's going to be.
Yeah.
Only band I've seen who has tagged themselves a Funeral Grind.
That's amazing.
It's such a disparity of like genres, but like it makes perfect sense for the kind of music they make.
One of the only bands I know that have just like come out and just like played trumpet like in the middle of like a grind song. All the way through the album, you just hear like fucking random trumpet bits here and there, and you're just like,
you gotta sprinkle in some mad stuff into your grindcore to keep it fresh, you know? You gotta salt your hashes.
And honestly, full of help, you've got an album called Trumpeting Ecstasy. Where's the brass? You're letting me the fuck down.
Someone needs to Photoshop the nun on fire and just stick a big old trumpet in her face.
Probably someone already has. Like, I'll put money on that already existing.
By the time this goes to air, we would have recorded our Full of Hell cover band, which exclusively uses trumpets.
I actually played trumpet when I was in primary school for 3 years.
Oh shit, nice.
Let's do this, Luke. Let's get on it.
We're into the home stretch now. So just before we go, are there any bands or artists that you would like to give a shout out to?
The whole Bristol scene, man. Honestly, from the bottom of my heart, I love Bristol so much. And like the importance of the DIY scene cannot be understated. Every band that plays in Bristol, every band from Bristol. But specifically, my homies, Grandchild. I would not have started Iggy Tapes without Grandchild. I love them all so much. Basically, everyone in Iggy Tapes, I just have like, they're all just like absolutely fantastic folks, basically. There's no whack shit on my label. It's just full of lovely, lovely people that make really, really cool music, basically. So in a nutshell, everyone Iggy Tapes. This is the gang.
I do have to say as well, like, this is a purely aesthetic thing, but I absolutely love an album art that is the, like, digitized version of a cassette tape cover. I think they always, without fail, look so fucking good.
Yes.
And Iggy Tapes is the home of some excellent album art. So yeah.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you.
Go check out Iggy Tapes. I'll co-sign that shit.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting you both. Cheers for just like letting me ramble at length about anything and everything. I love a soapbox. And I love not shutting the fuck up.
Nice. Any final words?
Cassettes are cool. Abandon streaming services. Kill TERFs. Never kiss a Tory.
Buy physical media. Support bands and buy shit at shows as well.
Hell yeah.
Like, please God, even if it's just to like buy a t-shirt to sleep in if you don't like the shirt that much, like support artists in your scene, because God knows venues and everything in the world is fucking people over right now.
Hell yeah. If people don't know about music venue merch cuts, Google that.
Oh my God.
Google that shit. It boils my blood.
Look up when my favorite artist Jeff Rosenstock got into big beef over that with everyone calling him an asshole when he was entirely correct about music venue merch cuts being fucking disgraceful.
Absolutely. Big up Jeff Rosenstock. Yeah. Quality dude.
Yeah, wonderful guy. Saw him play live last week. He was incredible.
So did I, man.
Oh, did you catch him at the Bristol Day?
Yeah, I did.
I love that band, and somehow in almost every episode of this godforsaken podcast I have brought up Jeff Rosenstock. I will never stop.
He's a guy that really epitomizes like the DIY scene and ethic though, right? And his big thing about
absolutely
getting his album out into like, you know, if you're in prison or whatever, it's just like, just let me know and I'll send you my album. It's like, you're in prison, man. You don't need to be spending money on me.
All of his shit is available entirely free online from every project that he's been in as well, which I think is incredibly cool.
Sick, dude. And also signed to Specialist Subjects in Bristol, or another sick label.
Yes. They are a fantastic label. I love Specialist Subject. Wonderful record label. And also, you can buy lots of vinyl and physical media through them. So if you want to support physical media, buy it through independent labels and companies rather than going to fucking Amazon. Because Jeff Bezos is a evil, evil man.
Hell yeah. Special Subject also stock Eggy Takes, so you know they're fucking real.
Oh shit, I did not know that. That's really cool. Nice.
Yeah, shout out the gang, Special Subject. Real nice dudes.
Amazing. I think, unfortunately, that is everything we have time for today. Is there anything else you want to say, Luke?
Nah.
This has gone on long enough.
It has gone on long enough.
Right, listener, close your eyes. We're going to take you outside and put you out of your misery. Whilst we do that, go listen to another one of our episodes of the podcast or something else. I'm not your dad.
Maybe an Eggy Tape.
Listen to an Eggy Tape or two. If you want to find us on social media, you can. We are at @_out_crew_pod on Instagram and also Threads.
No, we don't have Threads anymore.
Don't have to plug Threads. That's fucked up. Wank. It's terrible and I hated it.
No, I deleted Twitter. That like ages ago. I just didn't tell you.
Nice. I mean, to be fair, I don't think anyone was using it anyway, so I don't know whether it matters. Anyway, right. That's it from us. See you in a bit.
See ya.
Bye.